evening, everybody. Welcome back to Spirits and Ghost Stories. I'm your host, Thomas Ahrens.
And I'm Carly Byrne.
We are back, baby. We are back and better than ever. We've had a hell of a month. Okay, so
we've had a hiatus.
But let's recap what happened here. Weekend number one, we went to a horse competition.
Good God.
We did really well. Week number two was Memorial Day. We decided as a family to take a vacation. Week number three, another horse competition.
Yep.
Week number four, my sister
got married.
She wanted to get married.
Yep.
The nerve.
Yep. Week number five.
Five, she
went to the Bahamas to go watch my bestie get married. So literally, it's just been back to back, nonstop, like constant partying, vacation, summer, but then also trying to get in enough hours so that we could actually afford our lavish lifestyle.
Yeah.
So we're both exhausted. We're both... It feels like we should be relaxed at this point because of how many quote unquote vacations we've taken. But in all honesty, we're not, because we've been working the weekends to like make up for it.
Isn't crazy. This is what happens when you're poor. But you know what? We're poor in money, but we're rich in memories.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which rich feels like it's definitely something branded by a poor person.
I don't know. If anybody's watching this on the YouTube channel, then you would see that I actually kind of have a tan from the Bahamas.
And you know what? We have to say this portion here. She's been doing a really good job. It's been a very long time since she started this journey. Carly, tell the family, tell the folks at home, tell the people that are still somehow downloading Spirits and Ghost Stories every week, even though we haven't uploaded for like 6 months.
What?
You've been doing a weightlifting thing, right?
Oh, yeah. So my trainer, she works with Forked Up Nutrition. Her name's Brett.
Say that again.
Forked Up Nutrition, my trainer. I believe that's the website that she's on. But her name is Brett, and her husband is also a trainer. But she's been my trainer for the past, it's been over 9 months now. Or no, over 8 months. So almost 9 months at this point. And I just went through a cut the last like 2 months I've been cutting to get ready for the Bahamas. And so, yeah, I'm in the best shape of my life. Literally my entire life, and I'm feeling really good. I'm looking pretty good, and I just got really tan from going to the Bahamas for a couple of days. So everybody loves a tan.
And flex for the camera, and then we'll get into our next part of the portion. Yeah, baby. So here we go. We are going to get into it right now with scary things in the news.
Ooh la la. Whoa.
And I'm going to change the background to black.
The axe murder house?
So right now what we're going to go with is the 11 terrifying but true horror stories reported in the news.
Ooh.
What only a Viagra commercial. A terrifying movie or book or show gets your blood pumping in the moments of consumption. Sure, we cover our eyes in Squid Game with the rest of the world, but for the most part, you rest easy afterwards, knowing that what you've witnessed is just fiction. Once in a while, a story of dreadful disappearances, demonic possession, or devil worship will land in the
local
paper.
Stop whispering.
Instead,
just say a normal voice. You're like whispering when you read.
Instead of pulpy old paperback, we've rounded up the most unnerving.
Okay, restart that.
Real
sentence.
Life,
huh? Give us a normal cadence.
The problem is, like, if I whisperish, I can hit different tones.
Yeah, but you keep adding different tones for every single word, and it's inconsistent.
You've rounded up the most unveiling real-life tales below.
Thank you.
In horror of spooky season, here are 11 we can't stop thinking about. Okay. Number one, the Axe Murder House.
What?
The Axe Murder House in Visalia, Ohio, is well-known tourist attraction for ghost hunters and horror lovers alike. Ooh. The site of a gruesome, unsolved 1912 murder in which six children and two adults had their skulls completely crushed by an axe of an unknown perpetrator was purchased in 1994, restored to its 1912 condition, and converted into a tourist destination. It cost $428 a night to stay at this old haunted house. So basically, you could stay there if you want to. So that's number one. I guess we're going to go through like three of them.
Okay.
The next, the haunted doll. When you think of haunted dolls, it's likely the creepy old Victorian-looking porcelain kind that springs to mind, none of which you probably have lying around the house. Still, don't get too comfortable around any kids' toys too soon. Disney's Frozen Elsa doll that was gifted for Christmas in 2013 in the Houston area made headlines earlier this year when it seemingly became haunted. The doll recited phrases from the movie Frozen and sang "Let It Go" when the bottom on its neck was pressed. For 2 years, it did that in English, Mother Emily Mundia said. In 2015, it started doing it alternating between Spanish and English. There wasn't a button that changed these. It was just random. The family has owned the doll for more than 6 years and never changed its batteries. The mother says the doll would randomly begin to speak and sing even when its switch was turned off. I feel like that's just a defect by the manufacturer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's not a demon or anything.
Could you imagine somebody that's Spanish is actually making this doll so it learned phrases? And so it randomly just goes Espanol like a Furby?
Espanol. Yeah.
Anyway, number three. Okay, this one actually might be good. The Deadly Exorcism. In August 2016 in northern London, 26-year-old Kennedy Eif began acting strange and aggressively following a pain in his throat. Aggressively, like there's a pain in his throat. He repeatedly bit his father. Whoa.
What?
There we go. In August 2016 in north London, 26-year-old Kennedy Eif began acting strange and aggressively following a pain in his throat. He reportedly bit his father, threatening to cut off his own penis, and complained of a python or snake inside of him before his family restrained him to a bed with cables tied with excessive force. The family then set about attempting to cure Kennedy through restraint and prayer over the next 3 days, the court was told. His brother, Colin Elf, told the police, it's clear that thing was in him. What we believe was a demon, because it was not natural. It was clearly trying to kill him, he said. We had to restrain him for himself. It was clear if we didn't restrain him, he could have tried to harm people in our family. Kennedy Elf had been bound to his bed for 3 days without medical attention when his brother called emergency services, explaining that Kennedy Elf was complaining of dehydration. He appealed to have the developed breathing issues and was pronounced dead at 10.
Oh no, he died.
While police were at the house, Colin is allegedly carried out an attempted resurrection chanting and praying for Mr. Elf.
There's no L in there. It's I-F-E.
Oh, I thought there was an L.
No.
It's if?
I believe it would be like if.
F-A.
Or F-A?
All Stephen and Kennedy's F.A.'s family members were accused of manslaughter, false imprisonment, and causing or allowing the death of a vulnerable adult. Oh, no. The post-mortem exorcism revealed over 600 wounds, including a possible bite on Kennedy Elf's body.
Oh, no.
His father, Kenneth Elf, F.A., along with
four... Stop saying the last name if you don't want to pronounce it.
And Kenneth, along with four of his brothers, sustained injuries as well. Kenneth told jurors he ordered his son to take shifts and use overwhelming force, but denied that an association with cults played with the part of his death. After a 4-day jury deliberation, all seven family members were cleared of charges. That's bullshit.
Wow.
Ooh, he's riding a goat.
Look at him.
Why is he riding a goat? Why is he shoving something up that guy's ass?
His titties are hanging out. Doesn't that look like he has titties?
Is that a girl or a boy?
Well, I'm assuming it's a woman.
That one's a woman. Titties. That one, I don't know. That one's going for the titty. That's like the smut you read right there.
Oh my gosh, stop.
And a cat's just watching. Witches prepare themselves for a jury by brooms. Wait, what? That's the sentence. That is the sentence. Witches prepare themselves for a journey by broomstick to Black Mountain, Sirica, 1650, from a 17th century Dutch. That is fantastic.
Can I start my book yet?
Yeah, we got one more.
Okay. Oh, this is gonna go along with my book.
Yep. And then what we're gonna do is we're gonna have Carly now do this one. Go for it.
Oh, I have to make it a little bit bigger. Dead animals in the walls. When the Bretzuis family decided to insulate their home in Auburn, Pennsylvania in 2015, they discovered that it had already been with scores of dead animal carcasses.
That's not good.
As Fox reported, the dead animals were wrapped in newspaper.
Don't whisper.
From the 1930s and 40s and were among half-used spices and other items. After removing the items, they sent hundreds of artifacts and carcasses to an expert in Cutseltown. The expert attributed the rotting animals in their walls to powwow or Dutch magic, a ritual originating in the culture of the Pennsylvania Dutch to treat ailments and gain physical and spiritual protection. The Pennsylvania Dutch were a group of German-speaking settlers to Pennsylvania in the 1600s and 1700s and are often of Lutheran, Mennonite, or Amish faiths. The Washington Post notes on the magic. Many of the spells deal with the care of livestock, finding water, or the treatment of minor ailments, reflecting the condition and concern of early American settlers. But powwow also has within a tradition of darker spells and even of such things as conjuring demons. One notable ritual in their tradition is this hex to create loyalty in a dog. To attach a dog to a person, provided nothing else was used before to affect it. Try to draw some of your blood and let the dog eat it along with his food and he will stay with you. This mold found on the rotting carcasses in the Bretzius home has caused illness among the family members and they say that the odor hasn't gone away. No shit! Wow. That's disgusting.
That's awesome. And guys, there's, I'm thinking this article is big enough. We will come back to that. I just screenshotted. I think the Pennsylvania Dutch or somebody that go with our Appalachian. By the way,
I think
huge shout out to everybody. We had like 10 comments this week and we gained 8 subscribers.
What?
Over this past week because of Appalachia.
Stop.
And it really knows that. I don't know if we should be called spirits and ghost stories or just Appalachian folklore at this point.
Appalachian obsessed.
But I think really these are the people, aren't these the people, Carly, that live near us?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because
we got a bunch of Appalachians around here.
I mean, the Pennsylvania Dutch.
Oh, the Pennsylvania Dutch too. So we literally live like smack dab between both the Appalachian crazies and the Pennsylvania Dutch crazies. So we have Pennsylvanians live literally like 5 minutes down the road.
They also have the hats, right? They're the ones with the farms. Because you said they are the ones that drive crazy. Are those Mennonites?
Those are Mennonites.
Aren't they the same? No. Oh. Sorry for the population I just alienated, no, by the way.
They're not the same. It's fine. They wouldn't listen to a podcast anyway.
Anyway, with that said, Carly, what is our story?
Oh!
And with that said, guys, tonight we are drinking because we are still in our fast, but don't worry. Drink recipes are going to come back
in the summertime. There are no fastings happening.
Here it is. This is tequila. We're drinking Margaritaville tequila shots.
It's just Insta shots. I never said Insta. I said it's just.
I just said it's Insta shots. I think that's funny.
Prepare yourselves for the tale of the eyes. In the summer of 1981, I was a young and eager cop working out of Portland, Oregon's infamous North Precinct. The often heard refrain on the Portland Police Bureau was, "You screw up and you get sent to North Precinct graveyard shift." Happily, I hadn't messed up, but I was a newbie, and working with a senior officer on day shift, I would have preferred graveyard because it was such a blistering hot summer that year. According to the National Weather Service's historical data, August 8th, the day in question, was a record-breaking 107 degrees. My partner had to go to court, so I was sent out alone with a caution for my old sergeant to watch myself. Ours was a rough-beat Portland's version of a ghetto where violence was as common as the hookers that lined the streets. But as it turned out, my problem wouldn't be any of the usual shots fired, knifings, and felony car stops. Mine would be from, well, I'm still not exactly sure. After I told dispatch I was clear, I was sent to meet a complaint that had called in a welfare check, which was typically a one-not-seen call. This type of dispatch entailed the police knocking on the door, checking neighbors, and depending on the circumstances, forcing entry into the residence. Usually the person in question was in the hospital or taken an unannounced vacation. Sometimes the individual had died alone inside their home. I was hoping it wasn't the latter, especially on such an oppressively hot day. The house was in a seedy neighborhood, one I recognized from a previous contact several months earlier, in which I had warned the middle-aged man about his car's expired plates. He was a Vietnam War veteran, having served in the early years of the protracted conflict. He said he was struggling with his faith and spirituality, and he told me a little about the Benai Berith stickers covering his bumper. As a vet, I had a soft spot for others that had served, so I just gave him a verbal warning to get his licensing squared away. A grim-faced mailman met me on the sidewalk, and I asked him the usual who, what, and when questions, though the overgrown lawn, full mailbox, and the accumulation of daily newspapers made it clear how to proceed. The mailman walked with me around the old large house, and while the call was a no big deal situation, I remember feeling somehow grateful he was with me. He was a talker, giddily chatting about everything and nothing, no doubt thrilled by a little departure from his routine letter delivery. We stopped at what appeared to be the kitchen window. On the inside, several large black flies flitted along the dirty sill. Mm-hmm. I knew what that meant. Over the mailman's constant chit-chat, I tried to decipher all the heavy radio traffic on my portable to see if any of the neighboring beat cars might be available to assist. Finally, I asked dispatch, and they said every North Precinct car was tied up, as was East Precinct's units. Even supervisors were taking calls. I was on my own. The back porch was enclosed, its feeble door secured by an old-fashioned hook and eye latch. I retrieved my shotgun from my car, returned to the back porch, and quickly undid the lock. All the while, the enthralled mailman watched from a distance. He remained outside as I moved through the dark doorway. I don't know what I expected as I stepped in just inside the door to the kitchen. A dead body, maybe. Bloody carnage. Sign of burglary. But what I could see from where I stood was none of that. I was only in an empty kitchen, but not for long. One of the largest dogs I had ever seen before or since stepped into the kitchen through the far doorway. The muscle-dense beast, black and gray and unkempt, neither growled nor postured. He just stared at me. Into my eyes so intently, so profoundly that it chilled me despite the intensive heat of the closed house. I know now that it was an Irish wolfhound, one of the tallest dogs even towering over Great Danes. A dumb animal he was not. Those unblinking eyes exuded. Those unblinking eyes exuded intelligence and something else. Even today, I cannot put into words what that something was, other than to say I could see in them, well, a presence of what I didn't know then, and I don't know now, but those eyes and what was in them burned into my mind. No way did I want to force an encounter with the enormous dog. So I asked dispatch to have an animal control officer come to the house and get him. The mailman stuck it out just long enough to see the wolfhound extracted from the place and witness what I had told him about the creature. The animal didn't fight or resist, but it never once broke eye contact with me. Even when it got turned this way and that way, as the officer maneuvered him into his truck, the dog continually looked and turned his body toward me, twisting his head about to burn me with the intensity of its eyes. Mm. With the dog finally gone, as well as the mailman, and still no backup available for me, I chambered a round into my shotgun, announced my presence, and re-entered the hot kitchen. This time I went further in than I had before. The strange dog had stopped me, but I had gone only a few steps before a dreadful scene stopped me again. It wasn't another great beast, but rather a massive pool of coagulated blood that spread into an empty dining room. I turned down my radio so as not to announce my movements, and began to stealthily follow the blood trail, which led me into a bedroom where I found yet another large pool. The blood was on a wall, too, splashed crimson, nearly as high as my shoulders. Next to it, an open door. I moved toward it, paused to listen, and then peered around the door, facing into a small bathroom. The blood trail continued across the floor and disappeared through another doorway into what looked like another bedroom. Doors made cops nervous. Much time is spent in the police academy and in ongoing training, learning the safest ways to go through a doorway where on the other side are often surprises, some dangerous, some deadly. We learned to go in as a team with well-trained strategies and tricks. But I was a little more than a rookie, and I was by myself. The big house and its rooms were thick with oppressive heat, stench, and filth, but my senses shut all of those things out of mind, leaving only the two most needed at the moment, my ears and my eyes, both functioning at 110%. I moved quickly through the bathroom, stopped at the door facing first to listen, and then quick peek around the bathroom door into the semi-dark bedroom. The blood trail led across the floor to a rancid, disgusting mattress. On it, the body of the old Navy veteran sprawled naked on his back, his mouth agape in an expression of horror, his open, dead eyes beginning to putrefy. I looked down his neck, and I immediately wish I hadn't. His throat was almost gone, ripped and torn apart as if by some ghoulish fiend. A yawning opening of red, shredded meat and white bone was all that remained of what once was his throat and spine. As horrific as that was, it was his eyes that chilled me. I might have thought at that moment, at least for an instant, about the eyes being a window to the soul and all of that, but there was something else about him. It was as if his eyes had looked through a portal and saw something dark and dangerous, as if they had seen hell and its tortured beings. My training overrode these thoughts, long enough to continue clearing the house. Then, not entirely sure of what I had seen, I returned to the bedroom and the obscene spectacle. When I could no longer look upon the terrible sight, I lifted my eyes to the wall behind the bed and at a framed testament from Benai Barith, I started to read it when I felt a genuine sensation of being studied. This was followed by an extremely heavy, dark and oppressive energy pushing down on me. It was as if the room itself was drawing away my breath to assist the crushing weight. So intense was this sensation that I felt compelled to leave, not just the room, but the entire house, and ordered the medical examiner from outside away from what had occurred inside the walls. When the ME showed up, I had to go back in and escort him through the dreadful scene. He told me that the thirsty dog had savaged the dead man's throat to seek moisture in the awful heat of the closed house. The dark blood pools were a result of how the man chose to take his life. The can of Drano he ingested had burned out his digestive tract and internal organs. The Emmy confirmed that no crime had been committed, and then he left. "I'm having a busy day," he said. "No doubt the result of the 107 degrees. I would have many other suicides during my long police career, but the accusation in those two sets of eyes, the man's and the dog's, have remained with me to this day. I understand that our minds are a powerful organ and that it's possible I underwent some form of transference of stress so common to war veterans that are expected to hide or bury entirely their emotions. But the intrusive memories and mental images that would appear seemingly from nowhere, the vivid recall of the dog, the man, and the blood, perhaps triggered by something, will not leave me. They are infrequent now, and I have put them to rest. I realize they are probably just the result of an accumulation of events over a long career. As a street cop and a longtime member of SWAT, I faced a lot of evil during my career, but nothing like what I experienced weighing me down in that house. I'm not deeply religious, but I do have a sense of spirituality, and I'm convinced I experienced the presence of something unusual that hot day in August so many years ago. Some type of evil entity. Whatever it was, I know it was something at once dark and terrible. And that was the tale of the eyes.
You routinely are the one that just baits out like fantastic stories. Oh my gosh. And guys, by the way, this is actually from a book I found online. I'll link in the episode description right now to the title and everything, but it's about true cop stories and true stories from like first responders. Mm-hmm. That makes it worse. And so like when I'm listening to this story right now, I have a little bit more of like a few more hairs standing up on the back of my neck because I'm like, well, who's the source? Is it Reddit? No. It's like a cop allegedly that's telling his firsthand experience of this, and like that just makes it way worse for me emotionally to deal with.
Kind of terrifying. And the dog on top of that, like, first of all, we know that those types of dogs are extremely large, and they also have very human eyes. Like, they are, they naturally have those eyes that pierce
Jojo
eyes. You know, the soul. Jojo eyes, like our puppy, literally those eyes that just look at you and it's like they can read your mind. But to have that dog that obviously experienced everything and saw everything that happened, and then you make eye contact with it and it's trying to tell you everything that happened. I mean,
do you think the dog got put down or got rehomed?
I hope he got rehomed, but
because how are you gonna deal with like, oh yeah, this massive animal drank the blood of its owner who committed suicide.
Right.
Yeah. There's a really good thought to have tonight, guys.
Those dogs made it out.
I mean, we have friends like Carol Ann, you know, huge shout out. It's like, if she died in her house, would her dogs eat her? Because if she had cats, I've heard so many horror stories of that.
Oh, yeah. Cats are just like little teeny tiny lions. I mean, they'll do whatever they want.
Little teeny tiny lions. There's no big little lions.
They're little teeny tiny lions. They'll do whatever they want.
They're massive predators, but they're small.
They are straight up predators. Cats are not friendly. They're predators.
I'm going to leave you guys on this note here because that's something so funny. It's like, I heard this today. It's like, the reason cats are always mad is because of what happened to them. Because they went from lions to like, to
bred
cats.
Bred down into teeny cats. Tiny little feline.
And dogs balls. Went from, and wolves went from wolves to dogs. And the whole plot of the joke was that the dogs won. Because the cats, when they were lions, were like, hey, listen. We are just badass people. We don't need to evolve. And the wolf was like, we can't beat the lions. Let's team up with these guys.
Yeah.
And they did. And now flash forward like 1,000 years. And now it's like,
the dogs are having dogs a great life, yeah, and the cats like, literally hate themselves.
Yeah, and that's why cats are always mad. It's like the dogs are like, "What up, motherfucker? We won."
So great. One of my favorite comic strips has always been Garfield, and then I can't remember the name of the other one, but it was a cat with a human. And I think there was a dog involved too. But they're always my favorite comic strips had cats in them that just basically hated their lives and treated everybody like shit.
Yeah. It's just, it's, cats are so weird.
I know they are, but I want one.
But you know what's so funny is I don't fear cats and I should more. I fear wolves.
There are no wolves around here to fear. What are you talking about?
I just meant if you had to compare or contrast, like I definitely fear wolves more.
Well, if I was comparing and contrasting what I feared the most, I would probably say that I do fear
between cats, like lions and wolves.
Like a hyena.
But I'm just saying, like, yeah, like I shouldn't. I should fear like
But there are no hyenas here.
No, I agree. But like I should actually fear like tigers and lions more, but like the whole wolf thing. Maybe the thing about the wolves that's worse is like lions and tigers, I feel like there's a lack of intelligence there, people believe.
Bears are scary.
I'm saying bears and lions and wolves are scary. Bears and lions and tigers are scary. 100% scary.
Yeah.
But it's not about a wolf. Because I think it is because of the eyes. 100%. I think that's why man looked at wolves and are fearful of wolves. Because wolves, they like...
Except they took the wolves and they turned them into cute little puppies.
They did. But the fact is, a wolf, you look at it and you know he's working things out.
Yeah.
He's talking to his friends.
He's smart.
He's trying to like a lion.
They have their
like,
own communication yeah. system.
Whereas a tiger is like, I'm going to eat you.
Yeah.
That's it. That's yeah. all it is. They're just killing machines. I feel like that's what people think about them. But on a side note. Anyway, guys, this has been episode 76. And then I'm going to try to do this a little bit more now just to make sure that I'm basically taking care of you guys and I'm taking care of me to hold me accountable. Next week is 4th of July week. We have an episode coming out. And because it's the 4th of July weekend, because of fireworks and stuff, it means outdoors. It means camping. We're going to have a camping story, a ghost story come out okay. there. And it's probably going to go back to the thing that literally scares the crap out of me the most. We've had the best stories about. We're going back to missing 411.
Oh,
because
snap.
There's some new people that just went disappearing in Appalachia.
Oh, shit.
That I was actually researching today. I was like, yeah, that's going to have to be the story. Because it's creepy as shit where like their bodies are gone, but their stuff's there and there's no trace. And it's like, that's terrifying to me. The fact is like you could just be sleeping on a major trail and these people were like, 2 minute walk from like a major like a bunch of houses and they're just gone
forever.
That terrifies the hell out of me. You're mm-hmm. sitting in your bag and you wake up and like two of your friends are like,
you're not gonna be good at camping, are you?
I'm not gonna
you
be
have
good at
no
camping.
Desire to go camping.
Not like that, because these guys were intense. Not tense, like what is the thing that is between two, is it a hammock,
a thing between two what
trees?
Yeah, sleeping in a hammock.
Yeah, so all these dudes were like, these people were sleeping outside. So
you'd be fine with a tent but not a hammock?
No, I'd be fine with either one. I need like structure around me.
Uh-huh.
If you heard a noise at night,
I'm listening,
and then you walk outside and they're just gone, there's no bear claw or anything, just poof.
It's weird.
That's scary as shit.
Yeah.
You're not sleeping at night. Anyway, camping craziness coming next week.
Okay.
Thank you guys so much for just please, from the bottom of my heart, the fact that we had so many downloads when we went in a month without uploading, I really appreciate. Please like and subscribe to the YouTube channel. It helps us out. We're gonna be back, we're gonna be doing so well. Please forgive us for our sins, and we'll see you next time on Spirits and Ghost Stories. Bye.